I'm Brian McPherson, and this is the Athena Health Podcast. We're producing this podcast to help clinicians and staff better utilize Athena One so that Athena One can best support your patient care. We're going in-depth today on digital patient engagement, specifically the tools you have to help your patients pay their bills electronically, which our data shows can drive both faster payments and a higher patient pay yield. I'm joined by Kate Townsend, an Athena One administrative coach who specializes in the patient engagement space. Kate, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We're going to talk a lot today about digitally engaging patients. So let's start with a definition. Can you tell us what a digitally engaged patient means for us?
Yeah, absolutely. In the simplest terms, a digitally engaged patient uses digital options to participate in their own healthcare. These patients provide their doctor's offices with their mobile phone numbers and their email addresses, and they consent to receive reminders through text messages for things like appointments or their bills. So they sign up for the portal and they use it for administrative tasks like requesting refills, scheduling, or reviewing their results.
And so many of these digital engagement tools are important. You mentioned scheduling, reviewing results, but today we're really going to drill down on digital payments. So what would you say is the benefit to digital payments versus payments that come in by check or over the phone?
That's a great question. There are a lot of benefits. I would say the number one benefit of Athena's digital payment options is the convenience to the patient. Whether you are rocking a baby, you're commuting to work, or you're chilling on the couch, there are options to see your bill and make your payment. And when it's easy to make a payment, people are way more inclined to pay. We see this time and time again with our practices that offer digital options to their patients, and they're paid about 15% faster compared to in-office options. Additionally, they see a 44% higher patient pay yield. It's also worth mentioning that practice efficiency is a huge benefit. Running a credit card payment is arguably the easiest work that happens in a medical practice. And by giving patients online options, you are freeing up your staff to do more specialized work or maybe just take a break.
So let's also talk about patient pay broadly for a moment as well. In your experience, what is it that makes it difficult for practices to collect all of what they're owed from their patients?
I think a huge hurdle is that medical costs are usually a surprise. It's hard to budget for the things that you are not planning for. You know, you don't expect that your child is going to break their leg. And I think in this economy, folks just don't have a lot of wiggle room in the budget. Often, medical bills are a surprise amount. I think if people knew what they were going to be charged, they'd be more likely to pay quickly. However, with high deductibles and a general lack of understanding of what insurance covers, practices should really think about those digital options to patients and talking to them way in advance of their visit about how they want to receive that information. Now, another huge hurdle can be communication. Athena offers electronic statements and automated billing reminders, but those can only be sent if the practice has the patient's up-to-date contact information, so their cell phone number, their email address, along with their consent to text. So again, pathing that conversation really early on benefits both the practice and the patient when it comes to those hurdles.
In terms of getting everything set up to be able to do this, are these tools, the digital payment tools and reminders, on by default for all practices?
That's a great question, and truly, it depends. Every practice has a different suite of features with Athena. Now, payment settings in Athena typically do need to be enabled by Athena for the most part. Many of them are set up when you're going through your onboarding. However, I do encourage folks to ask for a settings review. Our product team has rolled out so many cool features in the last couple of years, and we want to make sure that you haven't missed anything. So depending on the status of your account, you're going to want to either, if you're pre-live, you're going to want to review with an onboarding specialist. Or if you're post-live, we welcome you to come to Coaching and Training Services, which is my team, and talk about what you have for current settings, what you would like to use, talk about strategies for those things, and then we can help you figure out if cases need to be sent or if there's changes to your contract that need to be made.
So if a practice were to come to you to talk about their settings, to take advantage of these tools, what other types of configurations and policies do you recommend that a practice ensure they have set up?
First, you're going to want to ensure that you have the appropriate products configured correctly for your practice. So again, please come to coaching if you would like to talk about that more specifically or if you need help reviewing. Also, you will need Credit Card Plus enabled to accept digital payments. So if you aren't currently contracted with Elevon for your electronic payments, you're going to want to chat with your customer success manager about updates to your contract. And then once you have those things set up, I encourage practices to establish policies for patient payments, like really have a stance on what is your brand when it comes to patient payments. Will you require a card on file for certain visit types? Do you market payment plans to your patients? Will you accept an in-office payment? If you do, are you going to present that patient with the digital options after you've collected their payment? Have a clear perspective on, like, this is how we do payments, and then communicate that to your patients early and often.
So what are those touch points? A lot of things happen pre, during, post-encounter. What are those touch points when patients are able to make payments electronically?
Let me run through those touch points kind of in a chronological order from pre-visit all the way to post-visit. So self-check-in is the first opportunity that a patient has to pay and also to update their contact information. So self-check-in features a section that displays the patient's outstanding balance if they owe from a prior visit, and it will also show them the copay for that day's visit. It allows the patient to make their payment, or if they have that existing balance, they can pay that or set up a payment plan for that information, which is far better than having that discussion while they're standing in front of you in the lobby. The patient can now supply you with their insurance card during self-check-in, which helps tremendously with timely and accurate billing. And then patients can also update their mobile phone number and opt into automated messaging as part of their self-check-in experience. So as you can imagine, this is a huge help to front desk staff. And all the patient-provided information that comes from that self-check-in reconciles neatly into the patient's quick view or their full registration, and their clinical information will be showing up in the chart. So that's kind of option number one to make that payment, is the pre-visit space. Now, post-visit, after the insurance payments have been posted and the patient's balance is available, there's a series of messages that we send to the patient and or their guarantor, depending on if it's, you know, the patient or they have somebody responsible for their balance. So it goes without saying, we do need their contact information, which is their email and their mobile phone number, with consent to call and consent to text in order to send the messages that I'm going to run through. But each of these messages provides patients with their balance details, options to pay with either a saved or a new card, and they can also set up a payment plan now. So the first message type that the patient gets are text and email messages called notification pay. This was formerly known as guest pay reminders. These get sent to the patient 1 and 3 days after that patient responsibility has been posted to the claim. These have a proven track record of getting patient payments very early on. I know personally, as soon as I get that text message from my practice that says, hey, your balance is available, I click into the link and I go make my payment. Now, the next messages that the patients are going to get is actually going to be related to their patient statement. So either their paper statement or electronic statement, depending what they have opted into. They will have the opportunity to do what's called statement pay, formerly known as quick pay. And that is happening generally about 20 days after that balance becomes available, if the patient hasn't already paid. So at any point in time, if the patient pays that balance, they do not continue to receive these notifications. But if a patient is getting that electronic statement, they can click right into the link and make payment. Helpful to know, too, they don't have to log into their patient portal. They can do what's called a two-factor authentication, which we're all pretty familiar with these days. That's when you get, like, texted a code and use that to log in. There's also a QR code now listed on their patient statement that they can take a picture of with their phone and enter the payment workflow that way. Lastly is the self-pay reminder. Now, those are the ones that the patient is going to get after their statement has already been sent. They're going to get phone calls, emails, and text messages to just remind them that they have that balance available. If the patient receives it by way of a phone call, those can be transferred to Athena's live operator team. But if they get the email or the text message, they can click right in and make payment right from there. Now, outside of those automated messages, there is also the option, as soon as that balance becomes available, the patient can log into their patient portal and see that balance and make payment towards that. And very soon, they will be able to make those payments on Athena Patient as well.
So a lot of these sound like great ways to avoid paper statements. And you've touched on already sort of the importance of getting the electronic contact information, phone numbers, email, consent to text. Like, can you sort of touch again on what makes that such an imperative part of the process and how you recommend people going about that? Because I know that may not be easy for everybody.
That's a great question. They are great opportunities to avoid paper statement, and that's just it. Correct contact information is the main thing, in addition to gathering consent to call and consent to text. I would say my best practice recommendation is really lean into explaining to your patients why you need their contact information and what you will do with it, and before you ask them for that contact information. So perhaps you say something like, hey, Kate, we're going to send you a text message as soon as we know what you will owe. Let me know what your cell phone number is, and we can make sure that you get that as soon as possible, which is far better than just saying, hey, Kate, can I have your cell phone number? So it's important to get those things, but it's also important to think about the way that we're asking for them in a compelling way, that there's benefit to the patient, the old what's in it for me.
And there's all those other benefits as well that we're not really touching on today, right? Like the appointment reminders and that kind of thing that they could bring up in that kind of conversation.
Absolutely. Whatever way you can spin it to the patient to get their contact information that's related to the care they're receiving. So clinicians have a huge hand to play in this. If you're, you know, in your visit with the patient and you know that you're going to be ordering tests for them, make sure you update their contact information at that point if you plan to send their results to their portal. And then there's downstream benefits to that. If you can get their contact information at the time that you're having that appealing conversation, then you have it when it's time to send that billing reminder.
So what kind of policies? Are there policies at a practice level, at an organizational level, that can help staff understand those responsibilities in terms of collecting patient contact information?
Yeah, absolutely. The practices who are most successful with Athena's communicator tools are the practices who have a very clear stance on their policies, and they communicate them to the staff and then in turn communicate them to their patients as well. So things like, are we going to require a card on file for certain visit types? Set that as a policy and then communicate it out going forward. And it may not always just be word of mouth communication. Sometimes it's posters that you hang in the office. And Athena does have marketing materials available that you can print out and hang in the office. So communicating policies is equally as important as setting them. If the patients don't know what they are, it doesn't really help. And if you can hang those things up in the office, you take some of that pressure off of the front desk staff. I would say the other thing is consistency is huge in making sure that staff have been trained. And when I say consistency, I mean having staff collect contact information and consents at every registration and every check-in of an appointment, kind of like a checklist of items that you want them to go through. And again, check on why you need that information with the patient and let them know what you plan to do with their contact information.
So you mentioned, for example, clinicians being able to update contact information during an encounter if there's a reason for it, such as sharing results, and that's a great opportunity. Certainly clinicians most of the time are not clicking all around in the patient chart. You know, they're looking at what they need to look at for their patient visit. But as of the spring 2024 release, we expanded the patient banner to make that contact information a little more visible so that clinicians can see a little more easily what may or may not be there. Can you speak to those enhancements a little bit?
Yeah. Athena's updated the patient banner for a better user experience based off of the feedback that you've provided via the success community. So with the old patient banner, you had to navigate away from the encounter, into the quick view, down to the patient contact information. And this inefficiency is exactly what we were looking to improve. So the new patient banner has mobile phone number listed right at the top of the page without having to navigate away from the encounter, along with upcoming appointment information, usual provider, and primary insurance.
So you talked earlier about how, you know, medical payments are difficult because they can be surprising. You know, they don't always know what the balance is going to be. Often with high deductibles, they can be surprisingly large balances, and that makes the practice's job of collecting particularly difficult. Certainly, it's a lot easier for a patient to pay a $20 copay when they walk into the office beforehand than it is to pay a $3,000 charge that comes to them before they've met their annual deductible that they see after the encounter. When patients see these large balances, I know payment plans can be a really effective tool to help patients kind of break them down into manageable amounts. Like how do you recommend that practices use that tool, the payment plans?
Yeah, payment plans give patients that option to break the large balance into smaller monthly payments. I would say practices should strongly consider the new patient-initiated pay plans. And it's an even more attractive option for both patients and practices because there's no phone call to the practice needed. The patient does not have to come into the desk to sign for something. When the patient is receiving all the notifications that I've mentioned about balances, as well as logging onto their patient portal or accessing their self-check-in, they will now be presented with options to break their bill down into those, you know, bite-sized chunks. I've had a couple practices tell me they were a little bit hesitant about enabling that option because they were assuming that that meant the patient could set themselves up on a $5 payment plan forever and ever, which is not the case. Practices are able to set up conditions in the system where they're saying, you know, if it's $150 to $500, I only want them to be able to break that up into three payments. And then from there, when the patient is viewing that balance, they will see those options to break it up into three payments, see what each payment would equate to, pick the day of the month that they're going to be charged, and then sign for the agreement, all in a digital space that requires no input from the staff. Now, the information provided to the patient flows nicely over to the managed credit card agreements page, where you can see if that had been set up by the patient and the terms that they set up. I would say if practices do wish to make phone calls to patients to try to set them up on payment plans, these patient-initiated payment plans can be a huge help in that space. You can offer your patient that option to avoid being sent to collections, but not having to ask them to come into the office to sign anything. You could just point them toward their patient portal where they can review that balance and set up that payment plan and then avoid any negative consequence like a collections.
So what's the biggest advantage to that patient-initiated workflow as opposed to the legacy staff-initiated workflow? And sort of how are we seeing people use it since that new feature came out in 2023?
Again, it saves the patient that phone call or the trip into the office, which is really going to increase the patient satisfaction with the experience. There's way less friction for them. They can do it at 2 o'clock in the morning if that is the time that they have available to them. And while we haven't seen a ton of practices set this up yet, where it's still pretty new, patients who have used it have given it very high satisfaction scores. Practices should set up plans on autopay with a credit card rather than a statement because there's a much higher yield. Almost 10% greater than when the patient has created the plan in the office, and over 25% greater yield if the patient creates the payment plan themselves over like a statement-based plan. So some pretty clear benefits.
And you mentioned credit cards. A complementary tool is the card on file agreement that we see a lot of practices use as well. When is the best sort of use case? When do you see those being particularly effective? And what are your recommended best practices for getting card on file set up?
Yeah, there's a few use cases that I can think of where you might want to consider a card on file requirement, like a telehealth appointment, especially behavioral health appointments, also an urgent care setting. Both scenarios, you may never interact with that patient again. And by setting up a card on file agreement, you're ensuring that you're going to get payment even if you do not see that patient again. Card on file excels at the days to pay metric, helping practices better manage their AR with an 81.2% charge collected in the first 5 days and then 97% in the first 10 days. It's really very effective for small balances. So think of like those co-pays or reoccurring charges. So it can be really helpful as well for reoccurring appointments like behavioral health or physical therapy, where you're going to have the same copay each time. That's a great opportunity to lean into a card on file strategy and really take some of that work off of the practice and also help that patient make sure they're making those payments on time.
And speaking of work off the practice, I know our aim is to make the card on file process even easier in an upcoming release.
Yes. Later this year, we're going to be offering a staff-initiated digital consent for card on file, which is going to allow our practices to easily gain the necessary consent for setting up a card on file agreement. So you do have a contract with the patient that has to be signed. Historically, that had to be a wet signature, which means the patient had to come into the office. But now the practice staff will be able to create that auto pay contract and just email the agreement to the patient for digital signature. We did the same thing with patient-initiated payment plans. Early on, that was kind of like the early iteration of what is now patient initiated, which that's the same goal for card on file, is to have the ability for the patient to do these items on their patient portal. So once the patient receives the auto pay contract email, they can launch right into the workflow to authorize the agreement using their own device.
So now let's touch on prepayment plans. And they certainly aren't a fit for every situation. And certainly, you know, the scenarios we've talked about a little bit where you don't know what your bill is going to be ahead of time, it's not a fit for that situation. But there are certainly situations where patients have foreseeable large balances that can be paid up front to reduce the time the staff is going to spend chasing the balance afterwards. How do you see those used?
Yeah, there's definitely scenarios where I've seen practices be really successful with prepayment plan strategies to collect on those large future balances. So I commonly see this with orthopedic surgery or just surgeries at large, also OBGYN care. And I've seen an interesting rise in prepayment plans across the direct primary or the concierge medicine space, where you know what that annual membership fee is going to be on an annual basis. So a prepayment plan can be a great space to use.
So now we've talked a lot about the tools that are available. As an organizational setup now, for those listening who are going to be training staff, like, what do you recommend in terms of staff training, staff awareness of the tools, driving performance, and then, of course, measuring and reporting on the effectiveness of those tools so that they can understand what their staff is doing and how well it's working?
Yeah, absolutely. Staff training is probably the most important piece when it comes to a successful rollout of any patient engagement strategy. So make sure everybody's swimming in the same direction. Again, have that clear practice policy of this is how we do patient payments, and then disseminate that information across your organization and set the expectation for the importance of collecting that patient contact information. So again, every registration, every check-in, we should be double checking email addresses, mobile phone numbers, and making sure we have consent to call and consent to text. That's probably the most important thing, and everything else gets easier from there. I would say enlisting the appropriate staff to manage your collections work list, or if you choose to use like the self-pay work list, to try to early identify patients who may have that large outstanding balance that's now aging. That may be a great opportunity to make some phone calls and contact people and see if they would like to be put on a payment plan. Ensure that you've got the right staff monitoring those outstanding balances, which really starts at the phone and eligibility work list. Our best practice recommendation is to always check phone ineligibility one day prior to a visit. So if today's Thursday, I'm looking at Friday's appointments and seeing, is there anybody that's got a huge balance that's on the schedule? Maybe we're going to call them before they're right in the office with us and try to see if we can get them set up on that payment plan, or see if they've got a plan, or maybe if we can get them to do self-check-in and resolve that balance before they come in. And then I would say for the practice leaders, as far as training goes, make sure that they're trained on how to run the reports for digital payments and that they have a cadence that they're going to run those. So that way you're ensuring month over month improvement.
So one thing that's tricky about all this is that a lot of the tools we've talked about, the organizations are setting them up, but you're counting on patients to actually take the action, patients to see the notifications, patients to log into their patient portal, all of those things. How can clinicians and staff get the word out to their patients about the payment options that are available?
Great question. Promotion is equally as important when it comes to communicator, making sure that you have promotional materials in your office. I've seen some practices be very successful with embedding the statement pay link on their practice website. So the quick pay portal link, they embed that right into their practice website. So if somebody just happens to look them up, they will see that information there and start creating that consistent expectation that this is how we do payments. We do them digitally. So setting those expectations really early on with your patients and then carrying them throughout every visit and explaining that is how you will be collecting money from them. Encouraging patient portal registration is another huge piece, explaining the benefits of the patient portal. I tell folks all the time, also make sure you have a portal worth visiting. Make sure those options that the patient really wants to see are there. So as much as you can, offering up options like patient self-scheduling, auto-publishing your results will ensure that the patients are able to get access to the things they really want. So that way, when it comes time to the things that they need to do, like pay their bills, they've already got that portal account set up and they know how to use it. So generally, just making information available and raising awareness that there are convenient options to pay their bill that don't include coming into the office.
So you've shared a lot of great information here today. There are probably listeners who are saying, boy, I really wish I could speak to you or someone like you on your team who's an expert about my particular situation and how I could set things up. We often hear people say, like, could somebody help me do this? What if a listener wants to talk to you or someone on your team about their situation and get more specific help?
Oh, it would be a pleasure. You are welcome to talk to your customer success manager about patient engagement coaching on digital payments or digital reminders, or you can request coaching yourself by creating a support case. Our coaching calls are typically an hour once a week for generally up to 3 weeks, depending on what topics you want to cover. And we can help your practice leaders review your current settings. We can teach you how to report on things like patient payments or portal adoption and email collection rates. We can talk to you about marketing strategies and also talk you through some staff training plans. So we are a completely free service and we encourage everybody to stop on by.
Well, that sounds great. Thanks for all the wisdom you've shared today. I really hope the listeners have come out of this with some great tips and tools to drive better patient pay yield.
Thank you so much for having me.
Here's what else you need to know. The spring 2024 release took place in March, and you may already be using the new features we made available to you and your organization in that release, including new automation for claim creation, new quick actions in the clinical inbox, and increased protections for sensitive patient charts. Be sure to check out the release centers on the Success Community for all the details on how to use those features to enhance your experience. You can expect to hear more about new features coming in the summer 2024 release starting in June. Mark your calendar now for Thrive coming back to Austin, Texas from October 28th to 30th. Where we'll bring together over 2,000 clinicians, payers, and healthcare partners who want to learn from one another and with one another. We'll have more details available soon, including a link to register for this fantastic event. As we discussed earlier, if you're interested in learning more about patient engagement workflows in Athena One, check out our patient engagement coaching offerings. You can visit the Success Community and search Patient Engagement Coaching to learn more. We recently doubled the number of offerings we have available, including trainings on order reminders and results calls. With over 460 partners across 54 capabilities and 60 specialties, the marketplace enables you to curate your Athena Health experience under one platform based on your specific business needs. Over 70% of Athena Health customers use one or more marketplace partner. Go to marketplace.athenahealth.com and filter by specialty or capability to find solutions that support your business, integrating seamlessly, empowering the most open, scalable platform in healthcare. If you enjoyed this podcast, be sure to tell your colleagues to check us out as well. The podcast is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can let us know what you think by email at podcast@athenahealth.com, especially if you have any topics you would like us to cover to better support the way you use Athena One. We here at Athena Health are curing complexity to simplify the practice of care. We'll talk to you again soon.